I apologize for the abrupt ending of my previous recording. The emotions conjured by my first reading of this tale began to swell again. Raphael, according to Talbot, was very much dead upon the floor of the Rod and Bow Club. A seeming impossibility. One of the earliest heroes of our dear Otari. There, I said it. It's not just a certain town on the southern coast of the Isle of Gortos. It is our dear Otari. As far as I can tell, devastation sweeps the entire crew, save Talbot, who seems to treat the whole experience as a confusing social experiment. A strange and ancient recording device is found upon Little Ruff's person, and a self-scribed note as well. The note shows what can only be his mental deterioration. On that, I'm inclined to agree with Talbot's summation. Ruff suggests that the knowledge he had discovered caused him to be stalked in the angles in the shadows. I suspect this hints at the strange nature and movements of the hound that preceded his death. Talbot himself activated the ancient recording device, which apparently showed a magnificent scene I wish I could have witnessed myself. A display of Star Watch detectives in the midst of a grand library, in a delicate investigation. It's obvious that the Harovex family of old is at the center of their investigation. However, the device sputters out before anything significant can be gleaned from its contents. With the tragedy of Ruff's death, the rest seem to resolve to pursue the hows and whys, with Talbot in tow, carrying his own grand sense of simple curiosity. Much to my surprise, it turns out all of this was happening on what the locals have come to call the Night of the Howling Moon. For the most part, the crew follows Offer's true-to-form lead and spends its time aiding the town, including my own efforts to save many books from the destruction of the Dawnflower Library. I had no idea at the time that this wonderful gesture of community was but a stepping stone along this tale I now record. Ruff was understandably left with Vandy Banderdash for careful keeping, a sorrowful role she takes in stride. I sometimes envy her courage. And from there, the crew set out for Absalom.
So it wasn't all that long ago that I believe it was James had expressed not a complaint, not an irritation, but I can't think of the word, like usual. But you know, there was a sort of exhaustion of the same repetitive nature of the mega dungeon that is Abomination Vaults. And it there's a point where it feels like it's getting a bit old because there's a repetitiveness to that, you know, open the door, you don't know what's behind it. Yeah, there's another 10-foot hallway to another door, yada, yada, yada. And I totally respect that sort of again, I can't think of the word, annoyance or you know, just that want for sort of breaking up the pace. And it put me in mind of obviously what we're doing now, and then also, you know, what we did with Jal and the whole night of the full moon, the howling moon, and how that felt, you know, play style wise, and it also brought to mind the preparation style that was required for these sort of changes up in pacing. And it kind of occurred to me that the usual preparation style of an adventurer is probably not like, it's probably very different from Abomination Vaults. And maybe someone else can attest to that, perhaps Cam especially. You know, mega dungeons are not the norm, you know, and it's a lot of just like me reviewing rooms that I think you might go into, double checking my work, and then double checking stat blocks. And that's the majority of my review for the last 2 years. All the extra stuff is something very, very different, such as this, which is I've been doing a lot more sort of custom work on. I have changed things just before the session. I did a lot of advanced work. It's so much more interactive and detailed. Anyway, I was just kind of, you know, verbal diarrheaing here. I was really just thinking about the change of pace and how it affects my preparation. Maybe affects my GM style. I'm wondering how it affects everyone's sort of approach to their characters and their role play and their energy when, you know, things change up that quickly and suddenly. Any thoughts?
Prepping for mega dungeons is different from prepping something more like these episodes have been. But I don't necessarily agree with there's more prep that goes into less or rather non-dungeon episodes, just because with dungeons, like for me, at least the way that I prep as a GM, I have to read the entire dungeon level because my players are chaotic as fuck. And we'll go wherever they please.
Yeah.
And we'll go downstairs before they've cleared a level because there's stairs. Let's go see what's at the bottom of this. And it's like, well, shit, I haven't even read that book yet. Hang on a second.
Not us.
And so, no.
We don't go down until we've seen everything.
If I can quickly interject, that was one of the earliest metagaming warnings I gave this group was be careful about going down to the next level until you feel ready, because it's going to be dangerous.
I am way more willing to improvise in my session planning for non-linear stories, mm-hmm. because I generally, because I am a fucking psychopath, will have an idea of how I think the campaign's going to go before it even starts. And so, like, I already have the things there in mind of, like, this will lead to this, this will lead to this. And it just becomes this web. And that sounds like it takes 100 hours, but it takes me like 2 hours because mm-hmm. everything else I'm just making up in between to lead into whatever I think the story I want to tell is. And then my players will sometimes change that and I will adjust to meet their expectations mm-hmm. While still trying to keep as much of my vision involved.
Mm. Anyone else?
I feel like I've never GM'd, and so I'm just kind of going off what I've heard from other people, but I feel like I've heard James before talk about how off the cuff his style of game mastering is.
Especially with 5e, I've heard the same from James. I feel like I recall him saying that the very early on learned don't over prep because again, us as players are very chaotic. But I'll let James elaborate.
So I'm at the point where I'm not saying I'm an old hat at this, but I've done enough, run enough games, run enough dungeons, run enough buildings that the way I prep doesn't change no matter what I'm running. If I'm running an adventure out of the book, I'll go through the map room by room and I'll do, if it's not just like an empty bullshit room that's thrown in because it felt like the map needed a room there, I'll do a short 1 to 2 sentence overview description to give flavor to the room, you know, touch the 5 sentences, that kind of thing. I'll do a point form section of just shit that might be available in the room. And at the very bottom, I'll do an encounter, treasure, and trap. And those are essentially just checkboxes that get done. And everything else I just kind of make up. And if I'm not prepping an adventure from a book, I will find a map that I like and then prep the same way. I always prep off a map just because I find that to be much, much easier. For those of you who want to get a feel for how I prep, there's a really good representation of it in our legacy 365 dungeon or whatever that challenge was, where I started making a room in a dungeon every day. I think I got through a month. So there's like 30 rooms or something like that. Yeah. That layout is exactly how I prep everything. Like, it's just a quick descriptor, touching your senses, other stuff that may be found in the room, treasure, traps, encounters, and then everything else is just improvised on the spot. Because I know what the room is for. I know, what's in it. I can just kind of make stuff up otherwise. And then once I do a whole floor of rooms, I'll do like a floor summary. So I'll do, ceilings are generally this high. Here's the temperature. Here's the condensation level. I really like those things that add verisimilitude. And I won't necessarily tell you, you don't need to know that every room is 8 feet tall unless otherwise stated, unless it comes up. But I have that information.
You have it there in case someone asks. Yeah.
Yeah. And I'll do a summary of the floor, like what the floor is used for or what have you. And that'll all be included in there. So I break it into 2 parts. And each floor is a new page in OneNote. I'm a big, big believer in OneNote for prep like that.
Yeah, I feel that one because I've come across that a few times. Running Abomination Vaults, I have a pre-prepped adventure in front of me, but it's easy to forget when you have this information available to you, to put it aside and make sure it's accessible. It's easy to take that for granted. So how many times have we come across it like, oh, how high are the ceilings in here? And I was like, oh, crap, I got to go find it. I don't know where it's
especially when Tulok can fly, baby.
Yeah, I didn't prep it, because it was prepped for me, but that's not an excuse not to prep. So it's like, it's like one of those sort of curveballs that you try to be prepared for, but sometimes they just slip through the cracks.
For sure. And I mean, in situations like that, it's your prerogative to just improv it. If you tell us the ceilings are 20 feet and they're actually 15 feet, who gives a shit? You tell us actually 20 feet and they're, at the end of the day, as much as we're playing a game out of a book, the emphasis still needs to be on it's our game. And, we've taken that route with the renaming the NPCs, some of the weird shit we've done, bringing Carmen along, like we're all creating this adventure. The book that has been given to us isn't an adventure. It's a framework for an adventure. It's not an adventure until we play it.
Mm-hmm. James, are you saying that in this game of make-believe, we can just make things up?
No.
Nonsense.
I mean, there is rules that we have to play,
You literally just said.
I said he makes shit up. Okay. The rest of us, we have a set of rules that we need to follow when we're building characters and shit.
I do my best.
Yeah, I mean, I think we're all very good at it, as evidenced by the quality of characters in this and our the Daily Show. But
I think that might be trademarked. I don't know if we can say that.
I have my doubts that they're able to trademark such general words.
They're looking for a new host, and it's Krucka. Yeah.
And I think trademark refers to images, doesn't it?
Oh, yeah, it would be copyright, I guess, maybe?
Yeah. I don't think you can copyright words like that.
I mean, Wizards
but
try.
Your system is broken.
Yes, it is. But everyone follows along because we have the bombs, baby. Woo!
Dunk, you've been talking about running a game. Perhaps does any of this give you some insight, some perspective, some worries?
Well, to date, the vast majority of my TTRPG experience has been Abomination Vaults, so I'm a little surprised it can be anything different but a Magadention.
It could be very different.
Wait till I run the Sailor Moon TTRPG. No mega dungeons
I thought I had a fever dream of that. Oh my god, that's good.
I want to.
I'm still on the hunt for that CRB. So if anybody, if any listeners out there have a bead on it, let me know.
But yeah, like I'm looking forward to seeing what's out there and stuff. I mean, the different kind of like one shots and stuff that we've done have been really interesting, but haven't really been a lot to kind of sink your teeth into to understand kind of larger narrative structures that may not be endlessly diving into the same dungeon. So yeah, I'm really looking forward to this. I've been enjoying so far being able to branch out a little bit. And yeah, once I start running a game, spoiler alert for the future listeners.
Patreon.com/UnchartedNorth.
Also when I'm running it, Discord. When I'm running it, it's a forward slash. So it's looking, you know, good. I'm looking forward to it, but I'm also willing to bet that I'm going to say something real stupid and wish I could crawl into the dungeon and you know, run away from it. That's part and parcel of it.
Welcome to my life.
it happens.
But Freeman, you don't even know, Freeman, you don't even know words. How would you say something stupid?
I don't know words.
Is that what you've been using this whole time?
I've had my players solve my one shots in like the first 3 minutes of the session and just had to make up the next 4 hours of gameplay before. So it absolutely happens.
Yeah.
But, you know, it's in your hands. You know, game and encounter design don't start when the game starts or when initiative's rolled. Right. You're always recalculating that stuff, no matter whether you've got the game prepped or whether you're just running it out of a book or whether you're making it up as you go.
Well, if I know my preparation style, it will remain minimal.
Whatever limiters are on you are usually self-imposed. or, you know, especially when it comes to, like, trying to play it by the rules and only by the rules.
They're, for sure. You know, like, I've played in games, Dunk, where, like, the GM literally did no prep outside of Lamau, Werewolf, and just ran a session. And it was still a lot of fun. So, like, don't... I am a prep person because I like to be organized to get things through, but like you have a different set of skills than I do, and I think that you can pull off just bullshit. I think you can just, and that is a compliment. That is a compliment. Yeah, that might sound like a backhanded compliment, but that is a legitimate compliment. Yeah. That you can literally have an NPC that shouts Krukka-isms and the players will still have a blast. It does not matter.
I think just if we could end on that note, and it's both what you've just said, James, and what Cam just said, is there's something to be said about the heavy lifting of the player, in that the GM can improv, the GM can have different levels of prep, whatever, but no matter how small or large they are, the biting onto the hook of the player and their characters, that adventure hook, and laying into it and the willingness to role play and having that energy to do so and kind of fill that time and give those gaps for a GM, whether they're prepared or not. That's a heavy lifting piece of players. And that I think is what makes some of the best gaming experiences, is the players, you know, meeting the GM on where that energy and their own prep and their own readiness, and that's to be applauded. And I think everyone here does a pretty damn good job. So, thank you.
If your players haven't bought in, it's like trying to ice skate uphill. Like
it's brutal. It's absolutely brutal.
It's absolutely brutal. That's why I'm so big on the player buy-in. That's why I always ask for it every session, every game we're doing. What's the player buy-in? Because if I don't know, I can't. You know, I don't feel like I can be prepared.
Can't get in the headspace. Yeah.
Yeah.
Or even just have the right character for the situation.
Speaking of headspace, where's Arthur feeling right now?
I mean,
depression, mostly.
If I recall correctly, we've ended everyone leaving, you know, going on the road, and it's about 2 days travel to Absalom. And that's a great segue. Thank you for that, Cam, because I was really thinking here, what is going through people's heads? Obviously you're stopping a couple times along the way for some rest, but mostly booking it, I think. And I want to open up the floor to everyone for opportunities to just get their characters into a zone or express how they're feeling, whether it's just in their heads or if there's some roleplay you want to do by the campfire. This is the floor is sort of yours, I think, before arriving at Absalom.
First of all, Kruga is not booking it anywhere.
That's
Kruga. Because of his hatred of books. Oh, I get it. I get it.
Abadumch.
The magazine is way down, but book is off the table.
I think when the crew settles down, Talford will light up some of the flay leaf and just kind of do the anybody want some? And if nobody takes him up on it, just kind of shrug before looking over to Kruga.
So, you appear to like to fight with your fists, is that correct?
Oh, I'll fight with anything, but the fists are probably the best for it.
I see. And, don't take this the wrong way, or do, whatever. I'm not exactly your boss. Do you pick up books?
Only to throw them at someone else.
I see, I see.
And we'll look over at Aelin.
So, I read your book, and the passage involving some of your surreptitious and, let's say, criminal activities intrigued me greatly. I was curious if there was anything that didn't quite make the edit to make it into the book. And also, real quick, would you be willing to sign my copy?
So Aelin's sitting back across the fire, kind of watching Talford start this conversation, smoking a little bit of his flay leaf. He was looking at him quizzically already, and then he brings up this question. And I think Aelin at this point is still trying to figure out his thoughts on Talford. I think that he didn't enjoy him very much for the last few days. Like, they've gotten to know each other by Talford staying at the Rod and Bow Club. But just kind of seeing the way that they interacted with Arthur, Aelin wasn't very cool with that. But, you know, he's not going to be a dick about it. So he looks at him and says, there are many, many things that didn't make it into the book. This book is about stories of fucking over rich people, stealing their trinkets, their necklaces, going out through back windows, making fools of them. What I had to do in the puddles to get to that point is something I would never write about. I've killed. I've seen things happen that, I mean, I'm sure you would believe. But I had to fight my way tooth and nail from the bottom to get anything. I was on my own in the streets for as long as I can remember. So yes, there are many things that are not in the book. And I will sign your copy.
No, well, thank you very much. I can't relate with the living in poverty. I did come from means myself. But I do appreciate your resourcefulness, your willingness to do what needs to be done.
And he'll give you that characteristic smile as he hands the book over.
And Aelin returns the smile with just kind of like a half grin, signs the book. However you sign a book in Galarian.
With a fantasy Sharpie, I think.
Yeah, pulls out like fucking some huge feather out of his backpack and a little pot of ink.
Some elaborate peacock feather, yeah. I did make the assumption in my the opening of this segment. Your desk had like multiple like exotic inks, if I recall correctly. So this is like different quills and different inks and all these things.
Oh, for sure.
So surely you have them on hand, yeah.
You signed it to Ralford.
And Talford will take the book back and place it in a backpack sitting next to the log that he's sitting on and take another long drag of the flay leaf before kind of casting his eyes over at Arthur, sizing up this small Shuni, and Telford doesn't really understand what he did wrong, but can tell that other people within the group are looking at him funny, or otherwise, what's the word I'm looking for? I'm pulling a Freeman right now. Casting aspersions towards him.
Freeman never would have come up with that word.
I know. Hey, I know that phrase.
Just they know like him.
Never when I need it.
And we'll just kind of contemplate the Shuni as a blowing the flay leaf out and mixing with the campfire as it crackles.
Is Arfur, like, what is Arfur's, I mean, we know Arfur is depressed and is going through a lot right now, but what is Arfur up to?
He's a little bit further away than he would normally be. You know, he'd normally be there hanging out with y'all by the fire, trying to be jovial and look on the bright side as much as he possibly can.
Getting the s'mores going.
However, probably. Yeah, today, yesterday, you know, this last 24 hours is probably the most distressing 24 hours of his entire life. His nephew's dead, his town is in ruins, and he has really nothing at the end of the day to go on. So he's spending a lot of time just as close to Goku as he can get without, you know, actually in the saddle. They're just like hanging out, laying down. He's feeding Goku, and he's just trying to spend as much time with Goku as possible because that's his best friend. And he's already lost so much today. He just wants to make, you know, spend as much time with Goku as he can, unless something in the back of his head is telling him that this might be a one-way trip.
I'm so scared to accidentally kill Goku right now. if I accidentally kill Goku, it's going to be so bad.
It will actually break my
I
build.
Will come to Vancouver and fight you.
Yeah. Goku arrives on a farm and lives happily ever after.
Nice. So Aelin was looking at the fire after his interaction with Telford and looks up again at him and just sees that he's looking over at Arfur. And Aelin looks over as well and just kind of sees that he's mulling about over there. And they've already had dinner, you know, they're kind of bedded down for the night. But before they left town, Aelin had stopped to pick up a couple extra sausage rolls, knowing that Arfur was in a pretty bad place right now. So he just grabs one of those out of his pack and walks over to Arfur and just kind of takes a knee beside him and says, "Hey, I know this has been a rough day, but you know that you have us as family as well. And we will have your back, and we will get to the bottom of what has happened here." Aelin hands the sausage roll to Arfur and says, "Make sure you get your strength. We don't know what we're going to face coming forward, but I don't think it will be easy. And I'll need you at the top of your game, and Goku as well." And he gives Goku a little scritch on the head.
Yeah, so you come over and Arthur's like, he's got his bedroll laid out under a tree in like the hollow, and he's kind of sitting like leaning up on the hollow of the tree with his hat pulled over his eyes. He's clutching his bow in both hands, and then just Goku is resting his head on Arthur's stomach over top of the bow, so even if something did happen, he wouldn't be able to get it up quickly enough. Goku raises his head as you scratch him, and Arfur sits up and pulls his hat back into its proper place and quietly takes the sausage roll from you. "Thank you, Mr. Weinmar. You understand grief, I think, and it has been a tough day. But I don't think Arastel would send me anything that we cannot handle." He reaches up and he grabs the little piece of antler that he uses as his holy symbol, and it just starts glowing like this teal color with this vibrant energy being passed down from this deity.
I like that.
I know that this is going to be the trial of my long life, and it may be the last one for me. So, thank you for this kindness.
So, I have a few questions, if I may.
Aelin's just like, ah! Didn't realize that he'd snuck up behind him.
Aelin turns to look over at Talford. He looks back, and it's just a bunch of crumbs in our first paws.
You didn't catch him because you indulged in the flay leaf, so the scent didn't give it away.
Secondhand highs.
Yeah.
Are you a priest, or what should I refer to you as?
Arthur, I think, is probably best. It is the name given to me.
Very well. Arthur, you worship Arastel, that is correct, yes?
Worship. The truth is, I never have thought of it as a worship. It is Arastel's presence in my life since I was but a pup has been as ever present as the sun. Their blessing is as much a part of me as all of those sausage rolls I've eaten previously.
Aelin smiles at this, by the way.
Talford actually gets a grin out of that, too.
You just don't seem to be the type to be motivated by vengeance, so why do you care so much to go back to Absalom to track down your nephew, was it? It's killer.
All family is important to me, Mr. Arline. Be it this family here around the fire, or the blood kin from my Shuni family north of the island. Raphael was... we were close. He is the son of my brother, Bartholomew. And I loved him as he was mine. This is why I go. Bartholomew is... and he has Petunia to care, take care of. Someone needs to get answers. Because he deserves answers. No?
Answers are truly the highest calling that anyone can achieve. Whether through manipulation, plotting, or scheming, it is always best to get to the bottom of things, no matter who is hurt in the process. I just did not believe that this was the same case for you. Did you?
Oh, no, it is not. We diverged pretty early in that sentence.
I see.
Their answers do not require pain and suffering. They require mercy. Vindication. And maybe some tricky magic here and there. But I have no intention of hurting anything just for answers. I will defend myself and those I care about, but the point of this mission is not to seek vengeance. The point is to seek rationale and reason.
Talford will give a nod and a genuine smile. The second you see it, it instantly is different from the normal smile he gives when talking to others. And you can see a little bit of Talford that Talford doesn't know about come through in that moment.
Humanity?
Talford's a half elf, no. No.
Half humanity? And also, Aelin, kind of, when this conversation is happening and vengeance is mentioned, his hand, which has been kind of resting on the hilt of the elven curved blade at his hip, just kind of, he just squeezes on the hilt a little bit. Because he knows that he's not against hurting people to get to the truth, especially when so much is on the line.
One of the fun things about being sixth level is I have Zone of Truth open to me, so violence isn't strictly necessary.
Yeah. Although the knowledge of being enchanted through such means can stoke violence sometimes.
Oh, but, yeah. But the fun part of Zone of Truth is if you decide to lie while in it, you take mental damage now.
Yeah, it's crazy.
And that's why when in that fucking fight with the goddamn, was it a bone demon or bone devil? Bone I constantly devil, yeah. had to answer your stupid fucking asinine questions.
Otherwise, I was hovering. I was waiting. I was like, someone refused to answer. I dare
nope.
you. And it just, won't made, be it caught just lacking. Made the roleplay so much better.
It was. But yeah, Talford will cross his leg over his knee and snub out the rest of the flay leaf before it almost looks like he rolls off the log into his bedroll and goes to sleep.
Cuddling his newly signed book.
Aelin gives Arfur a bit of a nod and a smirk and heads towards his bedroll as well.
Going through a late night kata or something, just like, you know, going through the motions of his martial arts. Like, oh, ooh, good God, y'all. And
then the bitch. He's punch dancing his rage out like an hot rod.
Krugus single-handedly invents the running man in the woods outside of Absalom.
But it's running toward its danger, not away from it.
No, but for real though, was Kruga there for any of that? That can be legit. He's doing that, but was there anything kind of going through his head? Because I mean, he kind of showed up after a long ways away, knew something was up in the forest, suddenly helped in this random situation at Weinmar's Rod and Bow Club, and then helped around town and is now on this journey again, like. You know, you've kind of gone from one thing to another very quickly. What's going through Krug's head? And what was his motivations exactly?
Yeah, he was there, and I think this conversation kind of perplexes him because he views violence as more of a utilitarian thing and not something with a moral kind of judgment you can make on it. Which, I mean, given some self-examination, he'd probably be able to find out pretty quickly that that's a fucking awful way to live your life because you're not going to be able to properly arbitrate what's immoral and not. Mm-hmm. But that's not going through his head at all. He's going, "Yahoo, good God, y'all." I'm thinking about how cool it would be to punch somebody.
Love that for
There's him. Talford perfectly asleep right now.
Well, yeah, I mean, like, his friends are his friends, but he seems to have a good enough kind of moral character to make the decisions that wouldn't lead him to be, you know, a cluelessly very evil person. But at the same time, the nuances of not hurting things in order to achieve a goal is kind of lost on him.
Fair enough. A simple orc at the end of the day.
Oh, yeah. Punches things. Walks around. Says funny stuff.
Doesn't read. Specifically, does not read.
Oh, makes a point to not read.
Amazing. So, you're traveling to Absalom, and again, it takes you about 2 days to get there. And as you close in to the big city, as it were, those who are familiar, the most familiar with the city, will know that you'll need to approach from the West Gate. The road from Otari, and through Otari you have the towns of Diabel and the dwarven settlement known as Galazur, which are further west. All the roads from those major settlements lead to the west gate of Otari. And you'll also know that as you approach it, there is a very familiar train of merchants, caravans, travelers, pilgrims, you name it, lined up to get through what is known as the Sally Port. On the Westgate side, and you know that this train is always there, and it remains there even after sunset when the gates shut, and people just wait their turn for a long, long time if need be. And as you approach, there are kind of sprawling settlements that have formed outside of the city to the north and south. You get up to closer or to the train outside of the gate. And get yourself in line.
As they are approaching this area, Aelin is slipping his collar up on his jacket and just kind of, I don't want to say blending into the crowd, but definitely trying to look as inconspicuous as possible.
Okay. And as you do so, perhaps one of the things that's, you probably instinctively triggered that sort of response as you got closer, but what doesn't help is that as you line up, you see there are inspectors that are outside of the city that run the line of the train, Scrivener's Guild inspectors asking if there's any books coming into the city. There are various military attachés double checking for any trouble. There's nearly always a mounted squadron of the Sally Guard, which are the known guard of the West Gate, and very proud cavalry, self-proclaimed cavalry of Absalom, kind of going up the line, up and down the line, making sure everything is in check. And they do not consider themselves any mere guards, so they give, especially you, Aelin, and probably... Talford, who's, I think, spent quite a bit of time in Absalom, a little extra pause. You know not to mess with them.
And I do want to put forward that the avoiding of notice isn't necessarily for the guards, for Aelin, but is more for potentially seeing people from his past.
For sure. For sure. But, you know, said guards could also be people from your past, you know, at the same time. You know, it's been long enough. You never know what's what.
Walking towards, he definitely has, because he has a hat of disguise.
Okay.
And he is considering using it. But do you think that he would know if that would be a bad idea? Like, in case, like, do they have like some sort of sorcerer or something that's just sitting there as well, trying to pick up if people are using some sort of illusion?
You know for sure that they're pretty thorough at the gates. It's not a complicated process, but if they suspect anything, they have methods for sure to figure out if someone is lying or if someone has an illusory disguise or what have you. And you know that could exacerbate repercussions. So it's a, you know, it's a calculated risk at the end of the day.
Yeah, so that's what I was thinking. So Aelin is just going to avoid that altogether, and we'll just go in. As, okay. Not as himself necessarily, but as Aelin Weinmar, not as Vale.
Anyone else concerned about their identity going in?
Arthur's like talking to people in line, like asking them about the Star Watch, if they know of any Ifriti detectives. Like he's actually taking the gather information activity.
Okay, he's going to town on that, all right.
Yeah, I mean, why not?
Talford doesn't display anything outwardly and probably in his own mind has like the briefest concern that he will be recognized, but otherwise is just waiting until it happens and see where it goes from there. Planning ahead on what to do if it does.
So Aelin is... Oh, sorry.
Yeah, you mentioned, or did I hear you correctly, that they're checking to see if books are coming in? Is Kregor finding himself amongst fellow book haters?
Nice.
There is a very, very famous law in Absalom called the Scholar's Law, in which any book that enters the city is required to be double-checked on a very, very large checklist for its title and contents. And if it is not on the checklist, it immediately goes to a library in the city to be copied before it's allowed back out of the city. So that's why there are people inspecting for that.
Well, given he's not going to be getting any attention that way, he's just going to go to the business.
The sort of thing that would probably excite Krukka, but is of no interest to Krukka.
Two sides of a coin, those two. What a coincidence that must be.
Aelin notices the agitation of Talford, if only just for a moment, and just turns to him and says, I guess I never asked you before, but is there anything that I should know here? Is there anything that we should be worried about?
Like I said, I came from a fairly well-to-do family, and I'd prefer to not be recognized as such in this particular matter.
Are they in Absalom?
Oh, no. Both my parents are quite dead. Well, my mother's still alive, being an elf and all, but she no longer resides in Absalom.
Aelin nods. Shuffles forward.
As you get closer to the gate, you find that some of the inspectors are coming out for a sort of what you might call an early check-in, asking what your names are and where you're coming from and what your business is entering Absalom, and if you have anything to declare, of course. And sure enough, eventually one of these small little groups comes up to your little retinue. I don't think you're carrying much with you, just kind of the packs on your back and whatever's on Goku, I assume, right? There's no carts or large bundles or anything, right?
No, Aelin's traveling light right now.
Yeah, most of our first stuff is on Goku's back.
Yeah, Telford just has a small backpack.
Yeah. Walking up to your group, a guard, with, you know, a small group comes up and one of the guards steps away and they all kind of stand there. They've been doing this, you know, person to person, and you just see one of them kind of waltz up to you, obviously recognizing that you are together, but not quite sure who's, you know, might serve as an effective leader. So just calls out to you and says, "All right, you up next. State your names, business, and where are you coming from?"
Telford surreptitiously nudges Arthur forward.
Goku steps forward.
Yeah.
"Hello, I am Arthur of Arastu, and me and my traveling companions, we hail from Otari."
"All right, and your business in Absalom?"
"Inquisitive."
He has a bit of a confused look on his face. Care to elaborate?
"Oh, right. We are looking for two members of the Star Watch. They appear to be investigating the death of my nephew."
Right. All right. Do you have proper documentation to get you into the Star Watch Keep or talk to one of their members?"
"We do not."
"Is that something you could perhaps help us with? We are from a small town and don't know the ways of Absalom so well."
No, certainly not. But if they happen to know who you are already, maybe you won't have much effort, and I'll be happy to answer your questions. But for now, I would say best of luck. Anything to declare?"
"Sorry, just one more question. Can you tell us where we would find the Star Watch?"
The Star Watch can be most anywhere, but their keep is outside of the city, down in the bay, on the southeastern side of the peninsula. But most are not allowed there, so I'm not quite sure what you hope to find, but again, best of luck. Any goods to declare?"
"So they don't have an outpost or anything?"
"The Star Watch are... No, they don't."
"Okay, thank you for your help."
"Right, anything to declare?"
"Just that we hope you have a very nice day."
"I declare you're doing a hell of a job."
"Right, and the rest of your names?"
"I am Aelin Weinmar."
"I am Krugga."
Telford Brawline."
"Right," and he just marks it down in a book. "All right," and he just like rips off a page. He's like one of those like sort of like double page carbon kind of things, and he's got his copy. He gives you your copy. He's like, "Present that at the gate."
"Oh, and, wait, before you go, Mr. Guards Customs Officer, I was wondering, perhaps you would know of a Star Watch. One is an Uruksi, and the other has bright red eyes and fiery hair."
"You come from Otari, right? I think you'll find there are all kinds here, Master Shuni. Difficult to pin that one down." And he's like, having a laugh at your expense. You can see him, right, like the guards behind him start giggling a bit, like thinking over here, like, "That's a stupid question," you know?
Arthur's really playing up the rube, like the local rube. Like, he knows that these aren't the right questions to ask, but he's also, I imagine, with a 14 perception, it's kind of picked up on Telford and Aelin's uncomfortableness, so he's trying to draw attention away from them.
Sure.
So every time he goes to, like, check Telford, he just keeps bringing him back over, like...
"All right, well, perhaps you know where we could start our investigation. Maybe the coins, the Ascended Court, where if you were looking for a specific Star Watch peoples, where would you begin?
He's just like looking at you, half laughing, and then you continue, and he just like realizes how serious you are, and he just holds up his own pad and he just points at it. He's like, I've got my rounds to do, bud. Like I said, best of luck. And he just starts to walk away.
Like he wants. I got my rounds to do, bye.
Yeah. It's from the east coast of Absalom.
I mean, at the end of the day, that's the desired effect, is to get him the fuck away from us as fast as possible, or get
information. The whole crew is just shaking their heads in the background and just like marching on with this guy, like fucking country bumpkins.
You know? Good. It means we won't be bothered further.
And as you slowly march forward, getting closer and closer to the gate, it's taking hours effectively to get through, and you're getting closer and closer, but you still feel like you've got some time to spend waiting. And you know, every once in a while there's, you know, a hold up that takes way too long. We've all crossed the border, we know the deal. And eventually one of these sort of groups of Sally guards comes down the line again. And they are not stopping along the way. And they just come straight up to your group and stop. And one of them marches out and walks up to you and says, Tana Votari. Is that right?
Correct.
Turns to the other guards and says, all right, get them on ahead. If you follow them, please, we'll get you to the gate. And you suddenly have this strange opening to skip the line.
Sense motive?
Yeah, I was like, I'd like to sense motive real hard. Is that supposed to be blind or?
Just announce it. I'm sick of blind.
23.
Yeah, Talford, you get the vibe that this dude is just doing what he's told. He was told to come find someone and has found them, and it was told to get him ahead of the line, and he's doing that. Doesn't seem to have an interest in you at all. Just getting the job done.
Okay. With a nod to his compatriots, he'll nudge Goatku forward.
All right, and you kind of break yourself out of the line. Quickly, you know, checking over your shoulder, you see the line being, you know, that gap being filled up really quickly, so you've now lost your spot for sure. And you follow this small group of guards up to the front. And just as someone is about to step in, you know, someone sees the guards coming with you in tow, stops them, waves you in, and you find yourselves right at the gate entrance, pulled to the side with one of the border guards. And this group of guards that got you there is kind of shooed away, and you're standing there at a kiosk with one particular border guard kind of looking at some paperwork and looking up at you and looking down again. He says, sorry for the confusion, friends. Name's Dominic. I've something a bit unorthodox, and I hope you keep it to yourself here, but friend of mine asked for any news of Otari. We don't get many traveling that are from there. Usually from Diabel or Galazur. But I have a keen interest in the goings-on in that town. And, well, I owe them a favor, so I've brought you ahead of the line and have been asked to direct you their way. If you would. And he just hands you a piece of folded paper to Arthur, I suppose. Goku's trying to bite it.
Yeah, right. Arthur leans down and like pulls it out of his mouth.
And you just flip it open and it just has an address on it. Such and such lane, Delarice Inn.
Could you perhaps give us a touch more information? Maybe the district in which this lane would be found? And Arthur like tries to hand him the paper back as Goku's trying to bite it.
Honestly, it's right here in Westgate. You just head a bit north. You can't miss it. It's a pretty popular inn. Very run by a lovely family, the Delarices. It's one of my locals, actually.
Thank you very much, Officer Dominic. We appreciate your assistance in this matter.
Not a problem.
Do you, by chance, know any members of the Star Watch? Specifically, an Aruxi and one with fiery red hair?
I've met a few Star Watch my day, but a few far between. There's lots of Aruxi and fiery-haired types around here, so I can't say for sure.
Your insight has been invaluable. Thank you, Officer Dominic.
And he, like, half bows in his saddle, but he can't quite fully bow.
And he gives you, like a kind of awkward look, like, I highly doubt it was valuable, but okay, thank you. You know?
As we pass through the West Gate, Talpard would like to go find the Gazetteer, like the newspaper of Absalom, just to catch up.
Oh, sure. I mean, you would know there are loads of newspapers in Absalom, and there might be some, like, reputable ones, but there's definitely some rags as well, some sensationalistic ones. But yeah, like each quarter or district would have its own, and then there are some, like, you know, citywide ones, and then ones that claim to be more like Isle Cortos, you know, spreading, and then of course, and because it's Absalom, you can get stuff from Andoran and Kadira, and, like, you know, how right. reliable they are, you don't know, but there is a plethora of options.
I'm specifically
the National Post, the Absalom Star, there's the Toronto Sun.
100%. Most of them are glorified pamphlets, but yeah, there's so many. Yeah, but yeah, as soon as you cross this sort of gate, and you move on from the border guard, you are met with like an effective intro market, and it is fresh goods. The smells are amazing. There's spices, there's coffee, there's tea, there's food, there's baked goods, which is probably drawing, making Arthur pull on some reins, and there are newsstands galore.
Arthur's stomach rumbles like a cartoon character. Like, you can hear it from feet away.
There are newsstands galore, because this is what people want the moment they come into the city. They want updates, and they've been waiting in the long line, and they want food. And they want drink, and they are eager to get themselves into the Absalom culture. And Westgate is ready for them right at the Sallyport.
Okay, so Talford is going to go ahead and grab one of each newspaper, which I assume is like a copper.
Sure, yeah. They're a dime a dozen, as it were.
And then is going to go ahead and grab some coffee and some croissants, which is French listeners.
Not when you say it like that.
Croissants. Croissants. That's some croissants.
I need like it's an insult.
Croissant.
Croissant.
Croissant. Stick some more disdain in there. No, would you?
Pardon my French.
Okay, if we had any French listeners before, now we definitely don't.
I mean, Tikali will still listen.
Tikali's
a champion. Real
is
one.
Quebec French, though?
He would say yes.
Now we definitely don't.
You've successfully
nailed it. You had to go there.
Anyways. Talford will just, like, grab snacks for everyone because he's not good at words, but understands that people like gifts. And so he will go out of his way to buy breakfast/brunch for everyone. And along with the
you turn around, and Arthur has a pie in each hand and a half-eaten one in between his legs on the saddle.
And then
I've removed three silver pieces. That feels like enough for three fruit pies.
And then Talford will casually add their croissant to the top of the pile between your legs.
Good job. Okay, so as they're kind of... Are they walking and eating, or are they stopping to eat?
Arthur doesn't have to walk anymore, so he can keep going.
I do think that Talford, unless pushed, is going to sit down and read through these newspapers, sipping coffee, and smoking.
I mean, they've been on the road for a while, and also standing in a line for fucking hours to get into a city would probably suck. So, yep. It's okay for them to chill. Nice sunny market, Oh, sounds wonderful.
Yeah. Arthur dismounts Goku, gets him some snacks, and just starts wandering around the district with a pie, half-eaten pie in one hand, asking people if they know any Star Watch. And he is taking the gather information downtime activity yet again.
I did not expect you to do this.
Krugga, having gotten slightly worked up by sitting in the line for hours, is back to in his kata going through motivational phrases like, I am angry and that's okay, but it's not okay to be angry.
Amazing.
That's so good.
Arthur's got like pieces of cherry and blueberry just like hanging in his snout, and he doesn't get any information. I rolled a natural one for a 12.
just you're just super off-putting to everyone you approach.
Just choking on pies.
Mouth full, mouth covered in blue. Just have you
roll me a,
you have what, you ever roll seen? Me,
roll me a perception check real quick.
30.
Okay, you're so intent on what you're doing, and people keep turning away, and you start to notice a trend that every time you like catch someone off guard with like, oh, hello, I'm here to talk to you, they turn and they are surprised to see you, and then they kind of like, and then you start talking, they go, oh, okay, get me away from this, and you start to think that maybe it's because they're, and you probably know this already, but despite how populous and diverse the city of Absalom is, Ashuni is actually a very rare sight. So they're immediately intrigued that there's a Shuni trying to talk to them, but then they turn away pretty quick. And that does stand out to you.
As Aelin is sitting, he is generally looking around to see what people are wearing. And he will use his glamored leather armor. But he's going to choose to dress he's going to wear clothes that are more Osirian or Katapesh style, where there could be some sort of facial covering. But relative to kind of the economic region that he's in. So like if it's a sure. really rich area, it'll be kind of nicer, or if it's mid.
Well, in this immediate market, it's a very wide variety. However, if you want to keep that going forward, the more you move into Westgate eventually, the more you'll find there is some money in the area. There's it's a main gate of the city. So, you know, you're going to get a massive variety of people and they're going to spread through the whole Westgate. But Westgate is a wealthy place at the end of the day because of said constant influx of people.
Okay, so just in comparison, yeah, he will keep it looking like he fits in. But like I said, kind of covering his face.
Sure. Yeah. And as you kind of settle yourselves into this market and take a look around and kind of have some food, and you know, you're lucky to have get ahead of the line, but it was still a long wait. Telford's sitting there sipping on some coffee, and any particular blends you've selected there, Telford?
I think that there is a mix of Osirian and Otari blend that feels familiar yet exotic enough to be different and enjoyable on a very like almost intimate level of like, this is something that tastes like home, but just that extra little splash that takes it to the next level.
Yeah. And you when you're looking at all the lists of coffee blends, and they are plentiful, you find that Otari is a rare one to pop up as an option, because they don't really grow beans there, so you would assume that it's actually just a blend inspired by what Otari is blending at the time, because they love their coffee.
Yeah, there's a hint of lavender and other things in it.
Shellfish,
nice deep cut.
As you're shellfish.
This coffee tastes like cherries and oysters.
The ultimate aphrodisiac.
So as you're sitting there drinking your blend of coffee and sifting through these newspapers, you know, anyone paying attention might notice that Talbert's looking for something in particular, kind of glancing through and putting one aside, and then glancing through, skimming it, putting it aside. And then eventually he stops on one, It is a sensational rag from the puddles called the Wet Rag Gazette.
Gross.
And across the front, it says, Wet Rag Gazette reports an abscess in the puddles. And then the article reads, new crime scene reports a local puddles gang devastated in what is believed to be a local gang war. Hopefully you've got the look of that. However, strange evidence was discovered at the scene. Apparently, every deceased member of the so-called pond kickers was found dead with at least one, if not several, teeth lodged in their bodies. Coroner's reports note that not a single tooth matches a single victim. It's a complete mystery where these bony death bullets hailed from. We spoke to locals in the puddles for more insight on the situation. One man, Dr. Polly Toothman, a local freelance dentist and florist, claimed there was a dental plaque everywhere. Speaking to our top journalist, he claimed, it was in the streets, on the windows, the like of which has never been seen before. Not even in the dentistry days of my pa's pa, or even my pa's 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 pa. That's my great-great-opa, who was the first to branch out to the Toothman florist business into mouthbone engineering. Rumors continued to swirl that a different, smaller, up-and-coming gang, known as the Half-Kin, was also devastated at what is now being colloquially called the Impact Zone, where swabs of exploding chemicals and shattered needles were also discovered strewn about the crime scene. Few are expected to have survived, and if any have, none have come forward. Stay tuned for our educated suspicions in next week's article on the potential new puddle serial killer the locals are now calling the abscess. Finishing that article, Talford quickly turns it over because there's something obvious on the other side, and you see this big full-page ad for a series of shows that are being performed by a musical troupe all across Absalom. And one of the focal points of the ad is that there is a new lead lutenist alongside with a whole new set list. It depicts a feeble attempt at creating a scary set of silhouettes of each member, and written in big gothic letters that are nearly illegible, you can barely make out the words, Shadow Malice.
Amazing.
Perfect. No notes. Amazing. No notes.
No notes.
Alan, here, this, you, in your book, you mentioned, being in a gang called the Half Brothers. Is that anything related to the Half Kin?
Alan kind of furrows his brow and reaches over, and does, Talford offer the...
Yeah, Talford is like, here you go.
Alan grabs it and just reads really quickly.
Yeah, it seems to claim that the pawn kickers that were completely devastated and this half-kin apparently were as well in this one single attack.
Do I recognize the name half-kin?
No.
Okay.
Unless you have been doing any particular recent digging of the gangs in the puddles, which I guess I've sort of assumed you haven't. We could do a retroactive one if you wanted to. But you're trying to maintain your thing, so you're arm's length at all times kind of idea.
No, I haven't done any yet because I only reached out in Otari about Din, and that was it.
Sure.
I believe. So.
Yeah.
No, I've never heard of this gang before. Obviously.
The Pond Kickers.
Obviously the Pond Kickers, I know, but.
I see.
I haven't heard of this other gang. I'd be interested to know who's involved. I must admit, it does make me happy that the pawn kickers have been removed. I told you before that I had been involved with some violence and other harsh activities, but it was never what we wanted to do, just what we need to get by. The pawn kickers were the opposite. They reveled in the violence.
Yes, yes, that sounds quite bad. You should never revel in the violence. You should just do it when it needs to be done.
Hear, hear.
And Aelin looks at this description of the impact zone and whatever happened, and looks at his group and says, have any of you heard of something like this, an attack like this? And describes what he reads.
Yeah, it sounds like Tooth Fairies.
Krugga, did you hear anything about this in your travels?
I haven't, but this seems to be slightly overblown, like they're making mountains out of molar hills.
Son of a bitch.
Duncan, take a hero point. I don't care what Freeman says. Fuck you. Take a hero point. That was fucking amazing. If Freeman doesn't give you a hero point, like, just let me know. I will straighten him out because that was fucking outstanding. Freeman has died, listeners at home, in case any of this gets cut.
We lost Freeman.
Yeah, Freeman's... Oh, I got him good on that one.
He might pass out.
Lacking Failing oxygen miserably. Right now. Yeah.
My belly hurt.
He's still dead. He's still dead. He's still... Wait, he's coming back. He's, oh, he's crying. I think he might be crying, oh, audio.
Well, I just... I guess he couldn't... He canine believe it.
Yeah. Oh, I'll show myself out. This laugh is too big.
I'll show myself out.
Maybe you guys just aren't that funny. I mean, I know the tooth hurts sometimes, but maybe
I'll give that guy a crown.
I know this is supposed to be more serious episodes, but like Jesus Christ, this is actually like this needs to stay in. Like that was fucking amazing.
This is fine. We have a little breakaways. It's so good. Oh, sweet Lord.
Yeah, where's my hero point there, Freeman?
Yeah, I'll go on. Everyone can have one.
Round of hero points.
Round of hero points. I mean, I was planning on giving one out anyway for all the... Because I knew this is a big roleplay session in a way, but...
I am your indentured servant.
Yeah, you made it easy for us to sink our teeth into this one.
It gave us something to smile about anyway.
Something to chew on, you might say.
Oh, God. I'm glad we just didn't come up the works.
Just be happy that when you came through the gate, you didn't get your cavity searched.
Jeez.
Hey. Okay. Let's end on
okay.
that.
Too real.
Okay.
Cam is loving this. Damn. Whew. Okay.
Where okay. Were we? We're talking about the impact zone and what happened.
Right.
Yes. So I do believe that tooth fairies, when they perish, they leave behind a plaque, as it were.
Anyone could roll a nature check to sort of corroborate that claim, if they like.
Anybody got decent nature?
I mean, I'll try.
Okay, I'll roll watch.
Oof.
You just hear in the background as Arpa's just like still walking around from people to people.
26 from Craig.
He does come back at this point, and his muzzle is all purple from the blueberry pie, and he's holding a pumpkin spice latte with both of his hands because the cup is too big for one of his paws.
No. Well, that's just fucking adorable.
We need more artwork.
Sorry. 26 on the nature from Krugga. Krugga. Jesus, I'm doing it.
It's going to be a rocky road. Yeah, you would know, Krugga would know that tooth fairies are very real fey creatures that, you know, can come in from the first world in various ways. So Telford is making a strangely truthful claim, possibly.
You're very strange, but you seem to speak the truth, is what I'm hearing.
Well, to be honest, I know a lot about everything. And I know that may be hard to take from someone like me, but if there's one thing I know, it's that I know things.
It's an impressive field of study.
Such a prick thing to say.
It's good, though.
I love it.
I was like, what the fuck do you want from me? Like, Talbert is a prick.
I know. No, I love it. Yep. Yeah. I'm here for it.
He's just you saying, know,
it's that's so what hard Talbert to play this character. It's so fucking hard to play. It's like, you're being an asshole. It sucks. Yeah, like, it really legitimately sucks.
It's the best.
I love how you're playing Talbert. I think me it's too. So fun to have somebody so shitty and antagonistic in the party. It's a really unique party dynamic.
But you're just almost too good.
antagonistic.
Yeah. What do you mean by that, Scott? What do you mean by that, Scott? What do you mean by that, Scott?
I said nothing.
Oh, who's the Talford now?
All right, so you have read and discussed the article. Some questions have been raised, but you don't have much in the way of answers. What do you do?
Arthur produces the note with the address on it.
Should we try this? There is somebody looking for us, apparently, so maybe we go down there.
If our goal is to find the Star Watch people that you keep on blabbering about, our best bet is to just go to Star Watch Keep. And I think that is a very quick and easy solution to this.
Well, I think that that is a good solution. We should see if we have a friend here first. Perhaps someone that could help us. We have no idea who this person is. Oh, wait. Okay, hold on. Would they recognize the name being from Otari?
Nope.
Oh, even with Krukka's expert Otari lore skill?
You mean Krukka's?
What about Arthur's lore?
Even with Krukka's expert Otari lore skill?
No. There's no reason for anyone to recognize the Della Reese Inn.
Aelin, I realize that you're a very intelligent person. Clearly.
Gives you the smile.
Let that hang for a minute.
Yeah,
yeah, the just smile. Literally,
just like no, you no, might smile. Two beats longer than necessary.
Absolutely, like just really lets it hang out there, yeah. Air out to dry.
You might say I have a plus one in that.
Oh yes, you're truly your intelligence is indomitable and unpeered. But what do we stand peerless. To gain from going to visit this mysterious message versus purely going to the source? And making our claims there.
Can everyone roll me a society check, please?
Should I not? Because I just made that claim.
Everyone, no? Everyone just roll me a society check. And tell me what you got.
27 from Krugga.
16. What the fuck? How is Krugga that good?
It was a pretty good roll.
15, I rolled poo.
19 for Arthur, but he was listening to the people at the gates who were talking to him, and he knows that we won't get into the keep without papers or an emissary.
Freeman doing the math on whether we know stuff or not.
I also slid in a little Absalom lore check just to spice things up a little bit, because my society check was poo.
Gary,
We're going to have to mute so much of Freeman's track right now. We're going to have to silence the shit out of that while he's typing away. I can hear
I just mute him for the whole episode pretty much every time.
Yeah.
Sorry, I've just Freeman's just going all hacksaws
over there.
In particular.
Yeah. I'm in the mainframe.
Kroga got the highest, and I have messaged you, Duncan, real quick about what it is you discern, if you would like to slip that in.
Yeah, so Krugga will just kind of like come out of his moment of meditation and transcendence and just kind of think about what they had experienced at like seeing that message earlier and just the age of the rod and the core, and we'll turn to the others and say, I'd be willing to bet, given the age of these items, that those agents are no longer alive. We may not be looking for them at all. Unless we want to find some corpses. I'm always up for finding corpses, too.
I also would like to find some corpses.
Okay, I want to find them less now.
I agreed with you.
Well, if that lead is dead, then perhaps... Yes, Mr. Rollin, like the aforementioned corpses. Then it seems our only lead is a book depository to try and find a reference of perhaps past Star Watches, maybe metals, or we head to this inn and see what this delightful innkeeper is cooking up for lunch. Perhaps it is some stew of some sort, or cold iced cream.
You seem very neutral in the choice that you'd like to make, but I agree the inn may be a good idea.
Don't forget that the note from Raphael, it did mention to follow the detectives. not that they'd be alive, but to figure out what they were onto. I remain of the opinion that we should go to the inn first, and then search from there.
Talford just lets out a shrug, pulls a cigarette out from a pocket, lights it, and drags deeply.
Just smoking darts and breaking hearts.
We'll find those corpses someday, buddy.
We currently don't appear to be in any danger inside of the walls of Absalom, and I would imagine the same is true for outside, at least in the near vicinity. There is always the possibility that we divide and conquer.
Well, yeah, there hasn't been any major problems since the siege of Absalom. Perhaps it is best if we all go our own ways and find our own sources of information.
Everybody but Talford goes to the inn.
Just smooth ditch.
I'm with it.
I if Cam wants to go to the Starwatch Keep, then I don't think there's a reason that we can't all just meet up at, you know, the coins for lunch or the docks for lunch or something like that. Looks like the closest exit's the East Gate, which is literally across town.
I mean, so this city's pretty sprawling, so I'm just going to throw it that it's separating that far and then meeting again. It's going to take some time. It's going to definitely take some time.
Yeah, looks like it'd be about a 4-hour trip.
Aelin turns to him and says, I understand that we might not all agree on where to go, but we do know that this inn is very close. What's the harm in stopping there first, and then we'll continue on from there? Come, let's stay together.
Talford exhales a plume of smoke.
I guess it can't be helped then.
And we'll follow along begrudgingly.
That's the spirit.
What's the spirit? I don't see any spirits. I can see those.
And you make your way north in Westgate a bit to find this Delarice Inn, and maybe you have to stop once in a while to just double check you're on the right track. But you find you are. It's kind of along the main road, and then a quick offshoot, and onto a quiet road, a road that suddenly becomes very quiet very quickly, which is pleasant. And you walk along this road a little bit. There's a couple horses here and there, kind of tied up outside of different establishments. But sure enough, keeping your eyes peeled, you find there's one little kind of quaint place. It looks like the building is quite old. Well kept, though. But, you know, one of the older buildings that really stands out in the city, especially given that it's in Westgate, which is a very, very well known for being sieged. One of the primary siege points when Absalom is sieged, and has been many times. But it is very well kept, very old, and there's just that little hanging sign. It just says, the Delarice Inn. And coming up to the front door, it appears to be fairly quiet. It's you're probably about midday or early afternoon right now. You would imagine that a place like this might get lively at night, but, probably primarily a place of spending the night and checking out in the morning kind of place, so. Kind of between services, as it were.
Well, should we go in?
Or for Nox?
Aelin is confused why you'd knock on an inn door, but...
Yeah.
Well, Aelin, they're between services, so it's polite to knock.
It looks closed.
But you knock, and everyone kind of questions your motives and your actions.
Except for Talford. Talford is weirdly on board.
There it's like you 3 p.m. at a Thai restaurant.
Blocking the passage. Right, yeah, exactly. Blocking the passage with a Goku, this large goat, and you just wait.
Oh, no, he would have tied Goku out front.
Oh, okay, Goku's up front, okay.
Yeah, yeah. I imagine there's still horse
this large Sunni blocking the passage, and...
getting larger by the pie.
There's a kind of no response at first, and then you'd knock again, and then you start to hear footsteps come to the door, and then the door just, like, broadly opens, And standing in front of you is a man with a slightly confused look on his face, which seems to be our first MO at this point. Just confusing people. He opens the door and sees everyone but Arthur at first, because Arthur's so short. And just looks around and then drops his eyes, and his eyes widen. Master Shuni, please, come in. And that's where we're going to call it.
That's why you knock, Mr. Weinmark.
Stemming the Tide is an actual play podcast of the Adventure Path Abomination Vaults and is produced by the Uncharted North Network. Stemming the Tide uses trademarks and or copyrights owned by Paizo Inc., used under Paizo's community use policy. We are expressly prohibited from charging you to use or access this content. Stemming the Tide is not published, endorsed, or specifically approved by Paizo. For more information about Paizo Inc. and Paizo products, visit Paizo.com. Music is composed by Will Savino and artwork by Greyhood. Stemming the Tide is recorded remotely using Foundry Virtual Tabletop. If you wish to connect with us or support this project and projects to come, we can be found at unchartednorth.ca, patreon.com/unchartednorth, and on all major social media platforms. Links to all credits can be found in the episode description and our website. Thanks for tuning in.